So I'm going to begin with a quotation that my brother sent me. And what is a journey? Is it just distance traveled, time spent? No, it's what happens on the way, the things that happen to you. At the end of the journey, you're not the same. My brother sent this to me about 3 or 4 weeks ago when I was going to meet him in Hong Kong and I had a 16-hour flight from Chicago. So he was really just teasing me on the distance travel time spent component of it. But I was putting together this talk while I was doing that flight and I started to think about this quotation, which incidentally he found during his PhD studies for a law thesis. He has some belief that a trial is a journey and a storytelling. I'm not sure how his clients feel about that, but he seems to do a reasonable job. Anyway, so what I'm going to focus on today and how this quotation relates to the talk, the subject matter that I'm talking about, is somewhat differently from some of most of the presentations perhaps that have been presented thus far. I want to look at causal effects in sensor and actuator networks to think about assessing how actuations related to changes in the environment, and to think about how you might go about designing actuation strategies so you can optimize the performance that you're getting from the environment. And these questions have relationships, particularly to some of the things that John and Hugh were talking about in terms of boiling down to inference over graphs. The main change is that we're going from Bayesian networks of factor graphs of probability distributions to causal graphs, which throws a few new things into the mix. So the other thing my brother challenged me was who was the source of this quotation, and I put together a few candidates for you to think about and vote on. The first one was Wittgenstein attacking Popper with his poker here. So this is a sample quotation that is a comparison point for you so that you can perhaps do a nearest neighbor classification algorithm just like Al was proposing in the last part of his talk. Here, and this is a quotation I like because I think it was shedding some light on the activity that we did on Tuesday in the breakout sessions and hopefully perhaps stuck into this afternoon as well. Don't get involved in partial problems, but always take flight to where there is a free view over the whole single great problem, even if this view is still not a clear one. So I think this is a worthwhile exercise to do. Then for engineers, we really need to delve down and come up with some concrete solutions. So that was one candidate. The second candidate, David Hume, causal analysis, I need to throw him in. This is just about observing correlations. Doesn't necessarily give you the connection between two events or two variables that you're observing, and stressing here the difference between perhaps estimation of data or estimation of variables and estimation of causal relationships. Finally, George. This is a very interesting little... This was a response to a question: if something happened, what are you going to do about it? And his response, if a frog had wings, he wouldn't hit his tail on the ground, if too hypothetical. Probably something like, if we don't find weapons of mass destruction. So the vote across these points, I was fairly confident that he would probably get my vote for this quotation. But as it turns out, somewhat to my surprise, my brother informed me that it was actually Principal Snyder from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So now I'll start tying it into some actual sensor network and sensor actuator network material. So going back to this, the key part of this quotation, it's what happens on the way, it's the things that happen to you. And we're looking at sensor networks that have evolved. This is my arrow of evolution. It's either an ape evolving to Bill Clinton, or Bill Clinton evolving to an ape, depending on your political inclination perhaps, into sensor-actuator networks. Sensor-actuator networks combining a set of sensors that are measuring the environment with a set of actuators that can change the environment. Now, we've heard talks about actuation. The focus has perhaps been more on controlling the sensors or controlling the objects. I'm going to be focusing on actuators that actually modify the environment. And how do you tell if those actuations have indeed had any effect on the environment at all? How do you assess how strong has that effect been? How do you design a set of actuations to achieve the maximal impact on the environment? So this becomes more of an exercise, not so much in control theory, it does become a dynamic planning exercise, similar to what John was talking about, but relates more to causal theory. And the second part there, dynamic planning, treatment strategies, etc. So I think I can skip this slide. I'll try and do a bit of a catch-up on time. My mother used to come in the morning, and when I was sleeping and we were supposed to leave in 5 minutes, she'd stand up and scream at the door, 5 minutes! So feel free to do that when I've got about 5 minutes to go. So causal analysis, the key thing here is how can we infer the impact of an actuation based on a set of observations? In particular, how do we get at this structure here, which is the probability of a set of observations given not, this isn't a standard conditional probability expression, it's an expression of where you've locally gone in to this structure and set the value of the variable x to something that you specify. So x is assigned to the value x. And this is a different activity from the conditional probability here, where you're just observing x equals x. So we've got a set of observations coming from this unmanipulated probability where we have some confounding interaction between the background variable z and this assignment of x to x. And we want to say, well, what would happen if I actually skipped all this effect of z on the x, delved right in, set x through external action to this value x, and assessed this causal effect here? How can I derive this from this set of experimental observations? So, putting this in something more of a concrete setting, we wish to evaluate the average effectiveness of a fertilizer. We have local background variables, soil moisture, temperature, weed density. Weed density gets thrown in there because this is some collaborative work with someone from the Department of Agriculture who has a very nice sensor that she's built that takes images and then assesses based on those images the density of the weeds in a local region. So the local background of variables are affecting the successful reception of the fertilizer and also the impact of the fertilizer on the crop. And we can set up a causal graph that looks a little bit like this. So we have UJ, which are local realizations of background variables with a global distribution G. So just to make sure you've got a concrete picture of what this is looking like, imagine that I've got a vast Canadian crop, or an Australian crop that is even bigger. And I've divided that into lots of little subplots. In each one of those subplots, I've stuck an actuator element, that's this Z. And then I've stuck a bunch of sensors that are measuring these variables W and X. These are the data points, the response of the environment. And then I've got a couple of hidden variables, D and Y. D is telling me, well, did this little sector of the crop actually receive this fertilizer that I was applying, I made the decision to apply. Why is telling me, was this application of the fertilizer successful? Did it cause a positive change in the growth of the crop? So that's what this diagram is getting at. And, yeah.
How much of that is specified prior to doing any activation in terms of parameterizations?
In terms of parameterizations, a lot of it. So you'd want specifications of how these observed variables are relating to a successful application of the successful reception of the fertilizer. You'd want a relationship between the successful change and perhaps here you're getting a rise in height of the crop, for instance. So there needs to be defined relationships here. The inference is really coming about, and I could have used your probability of X given Z. The inference is really coming about, what is the distribution of this G distribution that you have? How are these local variables being distributed around the crop? And that's the inference component that we're trying to get at here. So the average causal effect, and this is just I'm focusing on a concrete example of a causal analysis problem in sensor and actuator networks. The average causal effect is defined as the expectation over all these latent variables, the soil moisture, salinity, etc., the U, of the probability of positive response given fertilizer minus the probability of positive response without fertilizer. And you'll notice in the expression that the conditioning here is on D. So what I'm talking about is the successful reception of fertilizer. It's not conditioned on Z, which is the decision to apply fertilizer. So we're trying to make an assessment, is this fertilizer doing something good for the crop? We don't want to be confounded by perhaps neighboring partitions where we've applied fertilizer so that we're receiving fertilizer in this local region of the crop, getting a positive response, and that can mix up our estimations of, is this fertilizer a good thing to do or not?
It's like a randomized design,
right? It's like a randomized design, and it has a lot of connections with treatment designs and estimations in medical fields. Some of the interesting extensions and challenges become, how do you do this in a distributed setting where you have images of crops as your data points that you're trying to do the estimation. So, just to recap, average causal effect, expectation over latent variables, positive probability of positive response, given fertilizer, minus probability without fertilizer. And we have heard a few talks now about one of the major challenges being, and in this causal inference or in probabilistic inference, the problem boiling down to needing to get hold of an estimate of a very high dimensional probability, posterior probability distribution. And that's what this, we're trying to estimate G, it's a tough exercise. The key thing to observe in this causal analysis problem is that although these latent variables U and this probability distribution GU are high dimensional, can have a very complex structure, we're not really interested in this probability distribution. We have binary variables in this simple application that I'm talking about, Z, D, and Y. Did we apply fertilizer? Did we receive it? Was it successful? We don't care about UJ in particular and how that directly influences DJ. What we do care about is how U impacts the mappings Z to D and D to Y. And that makes the problem, if we think about this, a hell of a lot simpler. So what we can change this to is now, again, a distribution G. I've cheated a little bit in terminology. This should perhaps be G prime because it's a probability distribution of this CR variable, not the use. And this CR variable has 16 states. So it's a discrete variable of 16 states. We've gone from this very complex thing U, which might be continuous measures of soil salinity, and all these background variables that we could have high-dimensional complex structure, to 16 discrete states. And these 16 discrete states represent how this variable is affecting these binary mappings. Effectively, the reason it's labeled CR is we have two states here, or two variables, C and R. C is impacting this mapping from Z to D, and R is impacting the mapping from D to Y. And the way that we're impacting this mapping is in four ways. That's why there's 16 states, 4x4. We're either inhibiting it, completely inhibiting it. So if I'm in this state C equals 0, I don't care what Z is. You could have applied fertilizer, you could have not applied fertilizer. It's not getting through to your crop. It's not going to be successfully received. D is going to be equal to 0. If it's pass, then D is going to be equal to whatever Z is. If I applied fertilizer, it's going to be successfully received. If I didn't apply fertilizer, it's not leaking in from other crops. Flip, that's the obvious, the inverse of that. If I didn't apply fertilizer, it appears. Perhaps that's a rare event, but it needs to be defined. And then finally, activate. Irrespective of what Z is, you're going to receive fertilizer. And that an example there would be this case where you've saturated all the surrounding areas with fertilizer, so you're going to receive it independent of what the activation of Z is. So this distribution of CR is much, much easier to estimate than the distribution of U. It's just 16 states, multinomial distribution, and you can apply an expectation maximization algorithm to get hold of this distribution of CR. And the nice thing is you can express this average causal effect completely in terms of these probabilities of CR. It's really to do with how often am I in this state where the mapping from a successful D to a Y is just a pass, as opposed to taking off all the cases where I'm flipping them around. So the way that we go about calculating this is we apply a distributed EM algorithm across the graphical model, locally maximizing the likelihood function. The expectation step is calculating the expected CRJ at each node. The maximization, you need to average all these CRJs to form an estimate of JCR and GCR. So a sensor network evaluation, one way of doing it would be to think of a tree network topology where you're doing data aggregation. Leaf nodes transmit their ECR expected values of CR to parent nodes. Parent nodes perform aggregation, relay results to its parents. So you're doing an aggregation step up, a maximization at this fusion center, and then a broadcast down to the children nodes. So that was the first half of the talk. I'm not going to display any of the results that we have for this, partly because the experimental side of it is still ongoing, so there's some somewhat dodgy probabilistic models that have been kicked in. But I really want to just outlay the importance of considering causal relationships in making this estimation exercise easier for yourself. In this second half of the talk, I wanted to talk about actually how you might go about designing a mechanism for influencing the environment. So the first half was focusing on looking at the set of sensor measurements that we have and deciding, is there a causal relationship between these events, these actuations, and the responses? The second half is we have the opportunity to design actuation sequences. We want to achieve perhaps the maximal expected response of the system, grow these crops as high as we can, or provide probabilistic bounds on worst case behavior. Guarantee that only 1% of the time am I going to have a complete crop failure. So possible scenarios here, if we have reasonably accurate models of the probability distributions, then you lean towards a Bayesian network approach again. If we have very uninformative models, we stray towards learning approaches, and it's the second, the learning approach, that I'm going to talk about now briefly. So the problem formulation that I'm thinking of is a season for this crop, an epoch of t discrete time intervals. At each one of these times, your sensor and actuator nodes are measuring a set of environmental variables v, and they're choosing an actuation belonging to a discrete set of actuations. At the end of the epoch, you're measuring a local response variable y. So maximization approach, a standard approach, would, if we consider a very simple case of a single binary actuation decision without a good model of this probability of the distribution of the response given a set of environmental variables, given an actuation, then we might consider a model where we just have some mean response plus some noise. We have a set of points to learn from, certain environmental conditions, certain actuation decisions, certain responses, and we want to learn the best actuation strategy, the one that would maximize this mean response term. So the approach would be regression and then subsequent maximization. If we're doing this in multiple steps, we're going to iterate that process. We're going to regress on the response and maximize and then regress on that maximization and take it back in a sequence of steps. The problem with this approach is there are some major robustness concerns. So maximization, this nonlinear operation that you're doing here, is going to amplify the regression errors that you have. So an example that I have here is if you consider the x and y axes there to be environmental variables, and this to be the response of a given actuation, say A equals 1, in this part of the environmental area, you're getting a very positive response, the green. In the left, upper left portion, you're getting a poor response based on this actuation. What I'd be given is a set of training measurements, certain x's, certain y's, and certain actuations, this actuation 1. And what I'd want to be doing in this regression maximization approach is trying to learn this structure. And then I'd be comparing actuation equals 0 to this regression of actuation equals 1, and I'd be choosing between the two, whichever one maximizes my expected response. Trouble is, if I only have a few points to learn from, and an example here, say I'm learning this response with some sort of tree structure, then I'm bound to make mistakes in this regression, particularly towards the boundaries of this good area versus this bad area. And if I'm talking about multi-stage planning, then once I make these mistakes once and do a maximization, I've made a binary decision to do this actuation or this actuation. Now I'm taking one step back and my error is just expanding again. So small regression errors can lead to very poor actuation plans. So what we're looking at is a relaxed problem. I'm not going to say maximize the actuation for maximize the response in every single region, design the optimal actuation strategy. I'm just going to say I want you to identify a set of environmental conditions, a set of actuations, such that the expected response exceeds a certain threshold. Doesn't have to be maximized, just exceeds the threshold. And the probability of terrible response is very low. And this isn't going to fill in all these environmental conditions. It's just going to be a restricted region that says, if I'm in that region, I can do this particular actuation, and I'm going to guarantee you that these conditions are met. And the way that we formulate this in a learning context is the so-called learning to satisfy class of problems. So we're given a set of points, x and y, from a certain distribution p. We want to find the set g that solves a maximization of the volume of g subject to satisfying this set of constraints. So we might have two types of constraints. Point-wise constraints, where we're looking at every single point in this set and saying, for every single point, you have to satisfy this particular constraint. An example here is that this expectation, no matter where I am in this set, should exceed a certain threshold. A set average constraint, on the other hand, would be of the form, if I average over this entire set, then the probability of me encountering one of these points that gives a really bad response is less than some threshold probability p. So the solution to that is to derive equivalent empirical constraints. So we've got a set of training points. These are going to be Monte Carlo versions of those constraints that I've just outlined. So in the case, for example, of this probability here, it would be the fraction of points in that set that fail this particular condition. And we have some results that I'm not going to go into that state that if these empirical constraints are close enough to these ideal constraints, then the solution you get by maximizing with these empirical constraints applied with some relaxation term epsilon gives you a satisfactory solution for the original problem. The way we go about solving this is an extension of the support vector machine with a Lagrangian formulation allocating different penalties to different violations of these individual constraints. And you're going to adjust these penalties. If one constraint is being violated extremely, then you're going to increase the penalty for that particular constraint so that you reduce the violation in your solution. So some final comments. Actuator networks present a host of problems that are different but similar to pure sensor network problems, specifically assessment of whether causal relations exist and an evaluation of their strength. Secondly, design of actuation strategies that yield a satisfactory environmental response. And these problem class here obviously have very strong relationships to causal theory, causal analysis in general, very large literature in that with rapid developments in the last 10 years. The place where the interest really comes in for these sensor actuator networks is that you're making distributed measurements, which are often very high volume measurements of data. The centralized algorithms to solve some of these problems are challenging enough. Coming up with distributed algorithms is another challenge on top of that. I'm going to close with another very wise quote from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I'll let you read this one yourself.